The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Woof. That's all I have to say about last night's NBA lottery. For the Phoenix Suns, I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. I hope Brad is enjoying Magic Camp on his well-deserved day off. Jordan Hamm filling in for Brad Sesmat. On the other side of the glass, I have Eric Sorensen and Devin Henry keeping us going here. Have a busy show talking, obviously, about the Suns, what's going on in the NBA. Some Josh Rosen sound came about. That's been a rarity here lately regarding Steve Keim on the Rich Eisen show. So going to dig into that. And, of course, Diamondbacks in the full swing of their season. So a lot going on. Let's jump into our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. We're going to have Gina Mizell of The Athletic AZ breaking all things down. Suns related with the lottery. I also want to get her thoughts on Monty Williams. What may happen with Josh Jackson, if anything, with his latest arrest from a couple days ago. So a lot of interesting stuff there. She'll be joining us in about 15 minutes. So the Suns, sixth pick, about the worst case scenario, what they could not go below the seventh pick, the way the odds were made for this. 14% chance to get that top pick, and they fell in at six. I think right now, if you're the NBA and you're trying to squash quote-unquote tanking, I think that achieved that. Because you have teams that had no business being in the top three, in the top five. Now with the first overall pick, the New Orleans Pelicans. It's going to be real interesting to see what they do now with Anthony Davis, Dave Griffin, and Alvin Gentry, both former Suns. So that adds a little bit extra, I think, a little twisting of the dagger there for Suns fans seeing those guys get that pick and such a game changer. But really, I think, Eric, if you're looking at the lottery, I think most fans coming in, they just wanted a top two pick. Zion would have been great, but you have that availability to get Ja Morant, fill an obvious need, smaller school guy, but you've seen in the league. Guy, look at that Portland backcourt. Those are two small school guys that have been tearing it up. But it's a whole different ball game now.
It is. And honestly, Jordan, I blame myself because yesterday afternoon, I believe I sent you and Greg Esposito, who was supposed to co-host with you, a text message, totally in jest, saying, hey, I booked Gina Mizell to come on to talk about the Suns getting the seventh pick in the draft. And I said it tongue-in-cheek. And they got the sixth pick in the draft. Mm-hmm. So if you want to just throw darts, throw them right between my forehead.
Well, I was
the easiest way to do it.
I was planning if things went poorly for the Suns, I was just going to have Espo lay across the table and just do a therapy couch and just kind of say, welcome on in. Brought to you by Sagicor Now. Eric, or Espo, go ahead.
Right. Yeah.
Because
just take the headphones out and we will see you at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I'll shake your hand and make
sure
that
turn the mic down a little bit.
Make sure that you
screaming.
Get invoiced and we'll just keep going.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, Jordan, because I was looking at some mock drafts last night. I had a nice late plane ride back from Chicago. That's a whole nother story. But a lot of these guys that have been linked to the Suns at number six, I really don't know much about.
Mm-hmm.
A point guard from Vanderbilt who got hurt, I guess, in the third or fourth game. Some other Jared Culver, I like him, Texas Tech wing. But the Suns have numerous wings. It's just,
right.
It's just like the reoccurring theme of similar to not making the playoffs every year. Now the Suns are back in the cycle of, are they going to draft another wing when they really need a point guard?
Right. Going best player available when you probably should, but you have an influx of wings, like you said, and a bunch of – when I look at these point guards, and I want to definitely jump into this with Gina a little bit later, but when I look at these point guards, I'm seeing a lot of ball-dominant point guards,
yep,
or guys that have potential defensive flaws, guys that
incomplete game.
It feels kind of square peg round hole looking at these bare bones scouting assessments by a couple of these players. And again, they may go with a big, try to, you know, pair it up with DeAndre Ayton and just kind of go, we'll go low floor here. I don't know. We have what, a full month to kind of
right.
debate that and figure that out. But yes, obviously a a kick in the gut for Suns fans.
If James Jones wants to make a splash as a new GM of this team, go get John Morant. I don't care what you give up. I mean, it, within reason.
Right.
I mean, you have the sixth pick. It's not like they're drafting 10th.
Right.
And, you know, the conspiracy theorists out there are like, well, obviously Zion's going to go number one, and then you've got the team there at number two that could take a point, but the teams below them, like the Knicks and a couple others, mm-hmm. don't necessarily need a one. So maybe, yeah, no, I don't think so.
For those Suns fans still in denial, I can help feed that. Luka Doncic didn't go till five last year.
Oh, wow. And I was all on the Ayton train, like, the entire time. I didn't think Doncic was going to be a bad player. I totally believe he's got like a Manu Ginobili type ceiling, and DeAndre Ayton could be the next David Robinson.
Right.
I was eating that cereal all day, every day.
And look, it's not like Ayton had a bad
not
rookie
at all.
Season.
Not at
by
all. Not at all.
I think the frustration comes from Suns fans of when you so clearly need a distributor. And you see Doncic being that distributor that you start to think, even because I was with you. I was like, you know, when the Suns won the lottery, I tweeted out, it's DeAndre with a lowercase a, not a capital A.
I remember that.
Let's just get this thing done right now. I think that Suns fans should be very happy with where their rookie center played. Yes, he was a bit of a matador on defense at times, but it's definitely there. It's definitely there. And I think it was kind of a pick your poison of it's you have two good choices here. You just got to figure out what it needs to be. In the short term so far, it's been, oh, the Suns really desperately needed a guy to make this whole thing run so Booker doesn't have to be the ball dominant guard and, you know, be that playmaker and distributor and just go let him do his thing. But I think when you have that paired up where it's like, okay, potentially DeAndre Ayton and then Ja Morant, okay, we got
yep.
something here all of a sudden.
Yep.
So, but yes, definitely a disappointing night for the Suns franchise, and they will. We're going to dive into a lot of things with Gina Mizell about where do they go from here? Do they look at a veteran point guard? I know that you know, James Jones has made no secret that he wants to add more of a veteran presence. Do they go get a Mike Conley? Do they go kick the tires on Lonzo Ball? Where could they go with that? There's a lot of different options here, and excited to have Gina on because I think she can provide some great insight on that. D-backs lost last night to the Pirates. It is a rubber match here today. First pitch in about 2 hours. Cole Tucker, local guy. We heard Pedro Gomez talk about him on Monday, the Mountain Point alumni, or alumnus, excuse me. He is the shortstop for Pittsburgh in his rookie season. And I saw this quote from him, and this, I think, kind of sums up guys that grew up, or really anybody that grew up in Arizona in a little bit. I think my generation's a little bit pushing it. He's quite a few years younger than me, but saw a great quote from him after the game. This is from Adam Berry, the Pittsburgh Pirates MLB.com reporter. Said, earlier in the day, Cole Tucker was telling someone about where he was and who he was with when Randy Johnson pitched a perfect game for the Diamondbacks. During the game, Cole Tucker hit a home run. Obviously, loud cheers, a big contingent there for him. The tweet continues, Tucker, informed by Bob Nightingale that Johnson was here tonight and saw his home run, he said, was he really? Holy poop. That's insane. Just the reaction of a 22-year-old that probably your hero growing up saw your home run, you know, the highest probably athletic achievement you can have as a major league position player from one of the greatest pitchers ever in MLB, and he says, holy poop. I love that. We'll dive into this a little bit, but definitely want to kind of expand upon this. Josh Rosen breaking his silence a little bit in regards to the Arizona Cardinals, made it really clear that Steve Keim and him have had no communication, and Cliff Kingsbury was the one that actually made the call about a minute before the Cardinals selected Kyler Murray with the number one overall pick. Not sure exactly how that should have gone, but definitely not that way. And we're going to dive into that deeper here later in the show, just kind of expand upon that, because I have some thoughts. Eric, I know you have some thoughts on kind of the way all of that was handled. So a lot of interesting stuff going on in the Valley. Coming up next, we're going to have Gina Mizell of The Athletic, AZ, talking the Suns lottery, or really, I guess, lack thereof, and what's going on with them this offseason, in a very important offseason for Planet Orange. That's coming up next on The Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. We are now joined by The Athletic, AZ's Gina Mizell, Suns sports reporter. Gina, thanks so much for joining us on a very busy week for you.
Hey, no problem, Jordan. Thanks for having me.
So last night probably statistically could have gone just about, it couldn't have gone about as worse as it did last night for the Suns, coming in at six, obviously had their eye on the number one overall pick, maybe number two. But just what was your initial reaction when you saw that card flipped at six and it was the Phoenix Suns?
A little surprised. I think, you know, more surprised when you saw landed in those top four spots, when you start to see the Lakers pop up there, the Pelicans obviously landing the number one pick, the Grizzlies, you're like, oh, wow, this whole, like, trying to discourage tanking thing has worked out as beautifully as it could in the NBA's favor. So, yeah, when the Suns flipped over at number six, I sort of, you know, thought what you said as far as the furthest they could have dropped would have been number seven, and they almost fell that far. But, you know, obviously this is a team that won the number one pick last year. This was a special draft as far as Zion Williamson is available. But now it'll just be really interesting to see what this team decides to do as far as, do they keep that pick? Who do they, you know, try to go after in that type of range? Or is this now a trade chip to try to bring in a veteran point guard or to improve this team in a different way?
I know it's only 1 year in with the squashed odds, but based on who you've talked to, did the NBA feel like they accomplished trying to really discourage tanking, or do you think there could be any more adjustments to those odds moving forward?
Yeah, well, obviously it's a very small sample size, and
sure,
it's only 1 year, but that was kind of the overwhelming, I think, takeaway when you look at things from a broad perspective, because obviously the Cavs fell all the way to fifth, and then, you know, the Knicks wind up at three, but I think, you know, a lot of people think this is a two-person draft, so they also, you know, came out on the wrong side of the coin, so to speak. So, no, it'll be really interesting to see how this continues to work moving forward, but I think, you know, if you're Adam Silver or people who were sort of in charge of flattening these odds, it worked out, because, you know, you look at the chances, and obviously there's a way better chance that you're not going to get the number one pick than get it, but still people think, oh, there's three teams now with the same odds, one of them will surely get it, and that obviously did not happen. So, like I said, small sample size, but, you know, it will be very interesting to see if this continues to be the case moving forward.
You mentioned it. It seems many consider this a two-person draft with Zion Williamson and Ja Morant. When you look at the obviously the Suns have a need at point guard. When you look at the rest of the field, you know, you look at Darius Garland. You look at guys like Kobe White who could go in the top 10. Just what do you make of this point guard field really after Morant in this draft?
Yeah, well, those are definitely the next two names kind of on the board as far as projections and mock drafts and those types of things. And they're both interesting prospects. I mean, Garland, he's a guy that obviously missed most of his only college season with a knee injury, so he's kind of a wild card at this point, but is a great long-range shooter. A lot of comparisons to Damian Lillard in that regard, but, I mean, it still has some room to grow as far as his facilitating and his defense, so... you know, how well would he pair with a Devin Booker? I think that's an interesting question. And then, you know, Kobe White obviously is the guy who, you know, going into the college season wasn't even regarded as the best draft prospect on his own team, and had a great run and is super quick and up-tempo player that you know, again, and like you said, he'll probably be a top 10 pick. So, you know, those two are kind of the next on the board as far as the point guards are concerned. And then, you know, beyond that, as far as who could be available in that range, I mean, someone like a DeAndre Hunter from Virginia could maybe slip to six, depending on how things fall. You know, Brandon Clark, obviously a local high school product, could maybe be a reach at that spot, but could be somebody that could help this team, the Suns team, defensively. So, again, a lot can shake out in a bunch of different ways, but I think point guard is probably still the position that fans are eyeballing. But, again, it'll be interesting to see if the Suns team likes either one of those two guys, or, again, if they perhaps try to package that take and make a move for a more veteran, proven point guard if they're not sold on either one of those two guys.
You mentioned the veteran point guard option. With the Grizzlies getting the number two overall pick, it seems like there's a natural progression there, maybe that Mike Connolly could mm-hmm. be on his way out. Drew Holiday, I would guess that, you know, the Pelicans are certainly rethinking some things now that they got the number one overall pick, and maybe even Lonzo Ball's available. Just what do you make of kind of the field that would be available as a veteran point guard that could fit well with this Suns team currently, the way the roster is constructed?
Yeah, well, it's funny because in the draft room last night, I was actually standing right next to our Grizzlies writer, Omari, and I looked right at him when they got the number two pick, and I said, Mike Conley? And just kind of, tilted my head a little bit. So, no, I think we're all on the same page as far as that's immediately the team and the name that we thought of, just because, you know, Conley was almost dealt at the deadline in February, and now there seems to be a perfect succession plan as far as Ja Morant, you know, taking over for Conley at some point. So yeah, obviously his contract is really big, and so that's kind of the one hiccup as far as the Suns maybe possibly acquiring him. But yeah, Drew Holiday is, you know, another name that had been thrown out there before the draft, but I'm sure that everybody's heads in New Orleans are spinning right now trying to think of all the possibilities of how to put this team together. And then, you know, hear the names like a Russell Westbrook, a Lonzo Ball, kind of the more pie-in-the-sky types of possibilities, which nothing in the NBA would surprise me. But at this point, I think Mike Conley is probably, you know, the most likely trade option. And then obviously there's still free agency that could be a potential, you know, spot to add a point guard, somebody like a Ricky Rubio, Patrick Beverley, you know, perhaps to go after a D'Angelo Russell, who's a restricted free agent. So yeah, there's still lots of options, you know, on the table. It's funny because I thought that last night would bring some clarity to what the Suns will do, and now I think in some ways it just creates more questions.
Yeah,
a lot of options are still out there.
the exact opposite. During the season, especially the college basketball season, there were a lot of reports that James Jones wasn't quite out scouting as much as maybe people anticipated. If there is kind of that lack of scouting, where they are now in the draft, how do you think that will affect their approach? Because it seems like you have a Zion, you have a Ja Morant potential. It's seems a bit easier to scout rather than going a little bit deeper in the draft and kind of trying to find those guys in the mid to late top 10.
Right. Well, at least now you sort of know what range you're in, so you can kind of narrow your focus as far as, you know, the players that you're going after or potentially looking at. But I sort of wrote a story about this earlier on in the season, just how that shorthanded front office at the time was sort of managing not having as many guys in place or as many bodies out there as some other teams around the league. And you know, one thing, and it might sound silly, but James Jones said that, you know, a lot of times he'd just show up at games and wouldn't request a credential or sit in, like, the press area, wouldn't be on the list of people in attendance with a seat assignment. So, frankly, there might be some times when people didn't know he was there, or people in our position that are tweeting out to thousands of followers didn't know that he was in the stands. But and also they're an organization that really values going to practices as well to see how a specific player, you know, works within the confines of their team, how they how coachable are they, how do they then take a game plan and apply it, you know, on the floor during a game. So you know, there's no way around it. This organization had less people than most teams did last year, just because after Robert Sarver fired Ryan McDonough, he didn't replenish many of those roles or all of those roles as far as the people in the front office that were let go. But like I said, now this group can kind of hone in on the guys that they like. But I know they've seen DeAndre Hunter. I know they've seen Darius Garland. You know, the guys in that range, just based on the programs that they played for or the teams that, you know, that they were already scouting or whatnot, I know they've looked at those guys pretty closely already. And so now you can, like I said, you can sort of narrow your focus and really figure out if they want to grab somebody in the draft or, you know, try to add a more veteran piece that could maybe help this team more immediately.
Talking to Gina Mizell of The Athletic AZ. So let's shift our focus a little bit to a little bit broader scope. Obviously been a very busy offseason for the Suns so far. When you look at Josh Jackson and his arrest earlier this week, or it becoming public earlier this week, just how do you see that potentially affecting his future with the team? I know that James Jones has talked a lot about potentially moving some pieces to try to get some more veteran leadership in there. Could this affect his standing with the team?
Well, it's certainly not a good look. I mean, there's no way around that. And it's, you know, obviously not Josh Jackson's first misstep. And none of the missteps on the surface or on their own are, you know, wildly concerning. But when they sort of, you know, pile up over the course of a couple of years and you sort of start to raise your eyebrow a little bit, you know, he missed a fan autograph appearance during the season that, you know, kind of went viral on social media. And again, was just not a great look for the franchise at that particular time. And then this happens, and, you know, obviously it's because of the time of year, we haven't gotten a chance to speak with him about it or get a comment from him about what exactly happened. But, yeah, it's not great for Josh as far as just his look for the organization or for, you know, just where things are for him personally. But also, he plays a position that the Suns are currently really overloaded at. You know, there's a lot of wings on this roster when you look at him. You look at Mikal Bridges, T.J. Warren, possibly Kelly Oubre if they bring him back as a restricted free agent. So, again, if they package this pick or if they look for potential trade options down the road, you know, you would think that the wing spot would be where they would sort of trim some things. And you know, again, based on what's happened with Josh Jackson, he's been in trade talks or trade rumors throughout his career to begin with. And again, I don't think this will help that died down from his perspective. So again, we'll see. But like I said, overwhelming or overarching, you know, thoughts on that is just, you know, not a good look for him. And you know, we'll see what happens from here on out.
What did you make of moving on from Igor Kokoshkov and moving on to Monty Williams here just after 1 year with Kokoshkov?
Well, obviously, the instability in this organization has been pretty well documented, and that was just the latest example of it. And I thought the timing was interesting, both that it happened, you know, basically 2 weeks after the season, and then the news comes out at like 10 p.m. on a Monday night or something like that. But on the flip side, I think it was a great example of the fact that, you know, they went out and got the guy that they wanted. Monty Williams was their first choice. They were obviously not the only team that was trying to get him. The Lakers were in contention to grab him as well. So, you know, the fact that Monty Williams was able to come to the Suns, or that the Suns were able to land him, I think is a positive for this franchise. And kind of the most positive thing is the fact that Robert Sarver, you know, through our reporting at The Athletic during his meeting with Monty Williams, basically, you know, admitted the mistakes that he's made in the past with this organization, and the fact that he kind of laid out that he wants to have a long-term vision with Monty Williams as head coach and James Jones as general manager. So this could be the first step to creating some stability, both with this front office and the coaching staff, and then obviously the roster too. But, you know, with Sarver, I'll believe it when I see it.
So in theory, there is that first step. Obviously, going to be a busy offseason for the Suns. What if you had an offseason checklist of two or three things that they needed to accomplish this year, what do you think those top priority things would be to make sure they're making that progress within whatever you want to call it, the timeline or just the progression of bringing this team back to a playoff push?
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, obviously solving the point guard situation is still at the top of the list. And like we've laid out, there's a number of different avenues or options that this team could take to fill that void. But, you know, that's still a huge thing moving forward for this team. And then, you know, I mentioned Kelly Oubre obviously being a restricted free agent and, you know, matching a deal for him. It's tough to get a gauge on what exactly, you know, how much money he will command, just because it really only takes one team to offer him $20 million a year or something like that, and suddenly you're kind of put in a little bit of a bind if you're the Suns. But, you know, he did so much for this team as far as creating a locker room culture, the whole Valley Boys, you know, mantra, all that stuff. And so there's mutual desire and mutual interest for Kelly Oubre to be back with this team, you know, next year. And then, you know, the other, I guess, positional need or other thing that could be addressed is the power forward spot. This is a team that really struggled to rebound the ball last year. Really struggled defensively, particularly on the interior. So, you know, maybe having a guy that's a little bit bigger and not an undersized three playing the four, that could be a, you know, a viable option. So again, that could be a draft option too if they go after somebody like a DeAndre Hunter or Brandon Clark, and then try to address the point guard in a different way. So, you know, those would kind of be the three main priorities as far as, you know, what this team, you know, needs to accomplish. And then also kind of from an overarching perspective, you know, James Jones has talked a lot of times about wanting to add more experience and more guys that, have some playoff experience, that are, 4 or 5 years into their career, not 22 years old, 21 years old, a lottery pick within the past couple of years. So, however they sort of fill out the roster with those last few spots, I think, it's going to be guys who have some experience, preferably on winning teams, guys like Oubre and Tyler Johnson, who made an impact this past year. So those are kind of the main checkpoints. And again, it'll be really fascinating to see how the Suns go about trying to accomplish that and how much they're able to accomplish that.
Gina, thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Jordan.
All right, that was Gina Mizell of The Athletic AZ. She does a great job covering the Suns. They really have a great team over there, especially covering the NBA when you look at Gina, Bob Young, CJ Holmes does a really good job as well. And just a lot to chew on with kind of where the Suns go. And they're, like she said, plenty of avenues to go down to build this roster and continue to try to add to it. And right now it seems like they have an imbalance of wings and kind of how they use those assets that Ryan McDonough talked about so frequently, how they go ahead and use those now that James Jones is running things to make kind of the roster even out, I guess. So a lot to go over. I think next segment we'll go over that a little bit, as well as Josh Rosen, Steve Keim, the saga that just won't end. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. Appreciate Gina Mizell from The Athletic AZ jumping on with us, talking all things Suns after a disappointing Tuesday night with the draft lottery. But I think she covered a ton of ground. And I think the biggest takeaway, and Eric, feel free to jump in on what yours was. But for me, it was that everyone was kind of walking into Tuesday night thinking they were going to find some clarity. And now it's even more murky of, okay, Suns are now at 6. Who's going to be available? What's the best route to go? Do they try to package that with a veteran point to get a veteran point guard? Do they take a flyer on somebody? Kind of where do they go now?
Well, and what Gina said, which I thought was interesting, Jordan, was Mike Conley Jr. I mean, you would think that if the Grizzlies like Ja.
Yeah.
And what she mentioned about Conley almost got dealt last year at the deadline. Mm-hmm. Okay, what do the Suns need? They need a distribute, pass-first point guard.
Who plays defense.
That plays defense and preferably has some experience.
Yeah.
And Mike Conley is not young. But
he's in his 30s, yeah.
But you would think that maybe the price could be right. And he might just be that perfect veteran. Maybe not like the super at the superstar status that he was.
Right.
But at this point in his career, he's not going to be like Tyson Chandler or some of the other vets
right.
that they brought in to merely just collect checks and not really be much of mentors. But we'll
right.
see. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think you're going to see a lot of trades as we get close to the draft and on draft night. Because
yeah.
everything that we thought was going to happen last night, like you mentioned, nothing really happened.
No, none of it.
I mean, I thought for sure the Suns would at least get a top 4 pick.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. That was the interesting thing, because they had on the broadcast, they had it up where it was, okay, these are going to be in the top 4. And as they were revealed, that meant certain teams were jumping up. And then all of a sudden you're at like pick 9 and 3 of the 4 are filled. And it's
right.
got it's teams that should not be there.
Right.
So
right.
it was like, oh, man, that. OK. All right. It's going to be 6.
And I got a little bit excited yesterday because I guess like ESPN went. Did you see on Twitter? ESPN went through a rehearsal.
Yes.
And the Suns had the first pick, and there are all these whispers. You know how it is around lottery time, like
right.
the conspiracy theorists and all that. But yeah, it was not meant to be, but this is the Suns that we come to know and love.
With so. Mike Conley, you look at that contract, and it's a beast.
Yep.
Like there's no doubt about that. But you're gonna have Ayton on the rookie deal.
Yep.
Through that, because it's only 2 years left. Yes, he's not who he was 3 years ago when he was a superstar, if you want to call him a superstar.
I think he was.
Mike Conley is still a very good point guard.
Very good.
And you're now going to be, I don't think, if there isn't leaps and bounds progress where the Suns are going to multiple postseasons, I don't think there's any chance Devin Booker is going to stick around for another big contract, another extension. You're now wasting his best years. You need somebody. Like, in the words of Lawrence Fishburne from John Wick 2, get this man a point guard.
Like, exactly.
You just need that. So in most cases, I look at that contract. I look at where he's at. Doesn't quite fit the quote-unquote timeline. I think we've done away with that.
I think so.
That phrasing. But you're at the point you need somebody, and you need somebody good. And he's good. He's not. I don't think he's great anymore, but he's really good. And it's going to be a 2-year commitment.
It seems feasible.
Yeah.
What doesn't seem feasible is the fact that if the Suns don't make the playoffs next year, it will be a full decade since their last postseason appearance.
Crazy.
10 years of Suns basketball without a playoff.
That is crazy.
Unthinkable.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's shift gears to the Cardinals. So Josh Rosen broke his – he's been quiet throughout this really entire process for moving on from the Cardinals to the Dolphins. It seemed like there was a lot of miscommunication. And he went on Rich Eisen yesterday and said that, one, he got a phone call from Cliff Kingsbury 1 minute before – the pick was made for Kyler Murray, and that it was pretty much, hey, this is happening. We don't know what's going to happen next. He says he hasn't heard from Steve Keim really in the months leading up to it and since then. I think when you bring in a rookie quarterback like Josh Rosen, you give him an offensive line that is Swiss cheese. And yes, there were plenty of injuries that happened. I know this wasn't by design. You didn't try to give him nothing around him. But that's how it worked out. The offensive line was very beat up and not good at all. He faced more pressures than anybody else in the league. Your receiving core, you have a future Hall of Famer, despite what Max Kellerman says, in Larry Fitzgerald. And other than that, you had really nobody, because Christian Kirk, once he really got going, he then got hurt. So you give him nothing. You're going to move on from him, from Kyler Murray. Okay, that's fine. If you think Kyler Murray is the better choice, go ahead and do that. But I feel like it would serve everyone to, at least in the building. I know no one in the league knew what was going on. Now it's clear few in the building knew what was going on. And then the guy who makes the phone call is also a rookie head coach. Steve Keim has been the experienced one in this room the entire time. And to hear that, if that is completely true, then I think he handled that very poorly in the way that moving on from Josh Rosen, and I get it, it is tough to make that sort of decision, but at least still try to keep that perception going and that communication going with a guy that you really didn't give much to and you're going to move on for. Give him that sort of courtesy, at least keep him in the zip code of what's going on. I'm not saying open up the plans, but give him something throughout this entire process after his first year in the NFL.
What's that old song, breaking up is hard to do? I think This is the perfect example of the awkwardness. What's the NFL? It's a business. He did. He pretty much ghosted him. I don't think Steve Keim necessarily had to reach out to Josh Rosen, but it probably would have been nice. At the very worst, the afternoon of the draft. Hey, Josh, it's Steve. The draft is coming up in about 3 hours. Here's the deal.
Right.
We're going to draft Kyler Murray, and we're going to do our best to put you in a really good situation moving forward. You know, that could have probably squelched all that. And, you know, of course, Keim would probably say, you know, keep this off social media. This is a conversation just between us.
Or even after the pick.
Yeah.
And that was one of the questions that was asked after selecting Kyler Murray. That night, I was there. They asked, did you reach out to Rosen? And he said, oh, no, it's been really busy with the draft. I don't think it was going to be a long conversation. The pick was already made.
It didn't have to be.
It wasn't going to be Rosen saying, spell all this out for me. It probably would have been a quick conversation.
And everything you said was absolutely accurate about the poop sandwich that basically was served to Josh Rosen last year. Don't forget the Mike McCoy experience, which failed miserably.
Yes.
And Sam Bradford was supposed to be the guy sl/ the bridge to get to Josh Rosen.
And that
Josh
lasted 3 weeks?
And the bridge broke very early. I think, week three or week four, that was the done deal. So you also have David Johnson, who is the biggest mystery to me. I just wonder what happened to the old David Johnson. Yes, he's still a good running back, but he's far from an elite running back that we saw before his injuries.
Right.
So
if anybody can get him going, it's probably Cliff Kingsbury.
I would think so.
Is your shirt a vote for solidarity for Josh Rosen?
No, just by coincidence, okay. I decided to wear this dolphin-colored shirt. I don't know why. I didn't even know of the story, really, until I got in this morning.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, it's as you wrote on the rundown, the saga that just won't end.
No, it won't. I wonder now, the next time that Keim comes back, I guess he's traveling or something, if at the next media availability, someone picks the scab and says, any reaction to the Josh Rosen interview on Rich Eisen?
Well, it's going to be every time, every time Josh Rosen has a good game, every time Kyler Murray struggles, they are forever linked.
It's going to be a fascinating storyline to watch over the next couple of years.
Like we talked about Ayton and Doncic, they are forever linked.
Good analogy.
Now so is Kyler Murray and Josh Rosen.
And there's just so much, I was out last Friday for rookie minicamp, and myself and I think 75 other media members were there to shoot.
Watch stretching.
Yeah, to watch him throw screen passes. And you just think that guy has so much on his shoulders. Okay, not only is he the Heisman Trophy winner, not only is he the top number one overall pick, the franchise that drafted him traded away their franchise quarterback a year ago, and they're just going to throw this guy the fire.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what's going to happen. I want to think he's going to be a megastar. Yes, the next Russell Wilson, but you just don't know.
No, you never did.
You just don't know.
Jamarcus Russell was going to
be the
can't-miss prospect.
Had everything.
Ryan Leaf,
yep.
The can't-miss prospect. A lot to certainly navigate with the Cardinals as well. We're going to wrap the show up coming up next, probably talk some Diamondbacks, some other storylines in the state. That's coming up next on the Brad Sussmat Show. Continuing a busy Wednesday on the Brad Sussmat Show, I'm Jordan Hamm, filling in for the big guy. Wanted to talk a little bit of high school sports here. The baseball and softball championships wrapping up in the AIA. So the 5A game for baseball, number 2 Horizon against number 1 Nogales. Game started at 4 p.m. at Tempe Diablo Stadium. Eric, what time do you think the game ended?
4 p.m. start?
Yeah. 7-inning game.
Probably 6:30. Maybe 6:15?
9:41. 16-inning game in 5A.
Did you have second baseman pitching and center fielders catching?
I'm sure you get to that point where it's just I don't know what the pitch count rule would be for that or anything like that, because it's not like you're playing another one later. So I'm sure at some point you can burn guys, but I know there can be a cap at times. And
there are no tie. I mean, I know they wouldn't do a tie in a championship game, but they're if this was just a regular game in high school, they wouldn't. The games will just
regular
keep going,
season,
right?
Season, they might.
Just
and
call it a
Devin
tie?
Actually might be the most.
He doesn't
educated.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've yeah.
It I know it has changed over the years, but yeah, a 16-inning state championship game where
you
it
played
was,
2.25 games essentially.
Yeah. For much of the game it was tied 4-4, and then I believe Horizon scored to make it 5-4. The next half inning, Nogales scores to tie it, and they just kept going. 7-4 was the final on that. And then the crazy part is the 6A game had to happen after that.
Oh, my gosh.
The 6A game, Hamilton won over Corona after midnight on a Tuesday in the middle of May. I wonder if the
hopefully
AIA
it's not finals week. I don't think it is.
It's not.
Yet, right?
It's not yet.
It's
but
close,
it's getting there. I wonder if the AIA is going to look at this and just be like, there has to be some sort of contingency.
I would think
to bump it, because something similar happened in the basketball games in the state championships because there was snow up north, so everything kind of got pushed back. Didn't you work a 6A game that was started at like 10 o'clock for the basketball season, like to wrap the year up? Like,
that was a weather issue.
Yeah, that was weather. And
the games
it was
in
a
Northern
weekend.
Arizona had to get moved down to the valley.
Right, so everyone was kind of slid back by like an hour and a half. But that is still like... That was over a weekend. This was a Tuesday night. And
yeah, Devin just said the 6A game started at 10:39 p.m. last night. My initial thought, too, when seeing the story this morning with Horizon and Nogales was, if you're a parent of a player at Nogales and a game ends that late, you're not driving all the way back to Nogales, are you? Did some Tempe hotels make a little extra money in the middle of the week last night?
They could. I wonder if it was...
Hey, I can't make it into work. Why? Well, they played a 16-inning game, and I'm in Phoenix.
Right. I'm sure there was school transportation for the players, but all the parents getting up and down there. That's a great point, because that is... What, that's a 3-4-hour drive?
I'm checking it right now. It's 3 hours. Well, I guess it's not too bad. 2 hours and 45 minutes. So, okay. I thought Nogales was much further away.
But
than
still,
it is.
That's...
No, especially at that time of night going down the
I-10. Because game ended at 9:45. You still have a half hour of...
Good point. Yep.
All
get
the
up,
ceremony
yep.
and
sure.
all that stuff. You probably want to take pictures. You want to eat. You're not out the
you
door.
You want to talk to your kid.
Yeah. You're not on the freeway until about 10:45, 11.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yikes. A lot of tired parents and... Nogales.
On a Tuesday. Well,
that is rough. Special thanks to Gina Mizell from The Athletic AZ helping us break down everything Suns related, whether it be the lottery, their plans kind of moving forward, what her take is on how they should navigate. Interesting stuff. Make sure to check it out on the podcast if you weren't able to listen to it live. Again, a lot of interesting stuff going on in the sports world. Sounds like Brad will be back tomorrow. Glad he enjoyed Magic Camp. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. Have a great day, everybody.